keep the momentum going. And that's continuous meetings, continuous networking, and then set dates. Really set a, we are looking to raise this by this time, so that you give yourself a deadline and you give the investors a deadline and you can hold to it.
Emily Fritz Veloso is the founder and CEO of One Tribe, a wellness and community hub to support women on their journey to motherhood and beyond. Emily created One Tribe to address the challenges she faced during her own difficult pregnancies, where she struggled to find appropriate, convenient, and accessible resources and support. She has an incredible entrepreneurial journey, which included her co-founding the successful coconut water brand, One Coconut Water, which she later sold to PepsiCo. And she also served as the CEO of Sacred Space in Miami, a multi-divisional holistic wellness center. Get ready to hear Emily's story and her biggest business secrets. Coming up, you'll hear how Emily got her start in PR and healthcare marketing in New York City. She shares the story behind launching One Coconut Water. Emily takes us through how she dealt with the emotional and professional transition after selling her first business. You'll hear all about the launch of One Tribe and its importance for new mothers, as well as her best fundraising tips. And finally, Emily reveals her biggest business secrets. This is the Entrepreneurista podcast, presented by Socialfly.
It's the best business meeting you'll ever have, with must-hear real-life looks at how leading women in business are getting it done
and what it takes to build and grow a successful company.
It's beyond the gram.
With no filters,
no limits,
and plenty of surprises. Emily, I am so thrilled to finally be sitting down with you and recording this episode. We have to tell everyone, we connected, it was probably a couple months ago now. It could have been 6 months or 8 months ago. I don't remember, because I feel like ever since 2020, time, it just doesn't exist and I have no concept of it anymore. But I am glad we have made it right here now in this moment. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm super excited.
You have such an incredible story and so many business learning lessons to share with our entrepreneurial community from everything you've accomplished over the years. And you clearly have not stopped, because you have now launched a new venture. But before we get into all of that, when you were growing up as a child, did you always know that you ultimately wanted to be an entrepreneur and start your own business one day?
That's funny. Actually, yes. When I was a little girl, I wanted to be a businesswoman. That was the career that I wanted to have, probably because of my father. And then actually, it was funny, when I applied for college, I wanted to apply to business school and he wouldn't let me. He was like, absolutely not. This is the one time in your life that you can study anything that you want. So go study what you love, what you're passionate about, because you can always enter the business world and you can always go get an MBA. And so I followed that path, and I actually often share that story because I find it super interesting. And he was right. He was completely right.
Wait, so what did you end up studying in school?
Psychology and English. I tried to major in business, but the schools wouldn't let me. But I took anthropology, which I loved, sociology. So I love the study of people, and I love organizational behavior, all of those types of things. So that was more my focus.
And what was your career journey after graduating?
So I went, like all of us, I went to school in DC, I went to Georgetown, and half the school, we all migrated up to New York City. And I started my first job in the world of public relations. So I started in actually consumer goods, luxury. I worked with Breitling, I worked with Yves Saint Laurent, and then larger like Unilever brands. And I actually, it's funny, I knew that I wanted to go into health and wellness. I love luxury goods, but I just didn't feel passionately about it. And so I actually then moved over into the world of healthcare and really like healthcare marketing campaigns. I did global communication strategies for a lot of the LAR from Novo Nordisk, Bayer, Novartis, et cetera.
And tell me about launching One Coconut Water. How did that business come to be?
Well, that is a kind of a nerdy MBA story. So I was finishing up my MBA in Los Angeles. I had actually started the entrepreneurship. Going back to your question about business, I knew that I was going to get my MBA. I knew that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I didn't know why. I knew something inside. Like, I know that I'm supposed to start my own business one day. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to go study entrepreneurship. And that's what I did. I went to Pepperdine University. I got my MBA there and I started the entrepreneurship club. And then I started the business plan competition. And then I actually happened to win the business plan competition. It was a little, it was not rigged, but I was just like, oh God, this is a little much. And we ended up, me and my business partner went on to Moot Corp at University of Texas. There, I actually met my future husband and my future business partner. He had been at school in Sao Paulo and had written the business plan for One Coconut Water. And I remember sitting there watching him present. There were 40 teams from all over the world. And I remember thinking like, oh, we just need another healthy beverage. Give me a break. And when he presented about coconut water, I remember thinking, everything this man is saying is true about coconut water, the health benefits, the packaging, et cetera. This is the most brilliant business plan I've ever heard of. And as he would always say, he fell in love with me. I fell in love with his business plan. And, you know, fast forward about 6 months, I actually joined him to get One Coconut Water completely off the ground from our little apartment in West Hollywood. So it was a journey.
Were you dating at the time when you started working together?
Well, we started dating first. And I just was always so much more, actually was helping my colleague from business school launch his business. Once we knew we were going somewhere, I'm like, okay, it's ready. Let's move into the business. So we, it's funny, I often say our bigger commitment was, I was big becoming business partners almost than choosing marriage. It was a big choice for us.
Up next, Emily shares her insights into the growth and vision behind building One Coconut Water. That's two big commitments. So tell me what happened with One Coconut Water, because I know, you know, you ultimately sold that business, but that didn't happen overnight. What was the trajectory of that business and what was your role within the company?
So Rodrigo Veloso, who's my business partner, he was the CEO and I was the vice president. I don't even remember what the titles were because I didn't. I would say we were a really great team because he was very visionary. Both of us could see, I remember it was 2006. And we would be introducing coconut water to buyers. And we could clearly see that it was going to be a $1 billion category. And we said, well, around in between 2013 and 2015, coconut water should be a $1 billion category in the United States. And it was. But we were still like, this is what coconut water is. and going to meetings. So that was an interesting challenge at the time. My role at the company, I believe my title was vice president. And Rodrigo, my partner, was CEO. We were such a great partnership because he was very much a visionary and I was the doer. I was the operator. He could see 2, 3, 4, 5 years out and I completely could see his vision. But then I'd be back when we're like, well, I'm filling out these distributor forms and we need to get these sales. So we were really great. We balanced each other very, very, very well.
Did you know you were ultimately building the business to sell the business?
Yes. Yes. I remember somebody asking me that one time, you know, this is back in 2007, and I said, it would be great to have a family business, but I don't think that's the trajectory. The trajectory was really it was almost out of our control. It was going to happen. It was sort of how we felt about it. We knew we were going to build this to sell it.
Did you end up raising capital for the business?
We did. Both of us invested. The initial investment was 100% me and Rodrigo. And then we went out to family and friends. We had one major backer, because they could see the category. It was such, again, obvious to that investor. And then we went the private equity and strategic investor route. So we went through the different phases. We started talking to Pepsi Bottling Group very early on back in 2008, and we had only launched in 2006.
What were your biggest learning lessons from building a consumer beverage product? So what do you know now that you wish you knew when you first started that business?
That's an interesting question because at that time, it's very interesting to be where I am here in my mid-40s versus then I was in my late 20s. And then you're just, in a way, the best thing was that we had no idea. what we were doing and just completely learning on, didn't know the beverage industry, didn't know anything about distribution. We just knew we had a great product. That was it. So that was the biggest lesson, was just figuring out everything as you go. And so then it's interesting to now be here again on a completely new and very different entrepreneurial journey, is just how much more knowledge I have. I don't have the energy. I have 2 kids at home. I do have the energy. I don't have as much time on my hands. Then all we had was a Prius and two dogs, you know, in a little apartment. And here I've, you know, we've got a family, kids, and a lot more responsibility. So it's a different thing, but I would say today is middle-aged entrepreneur, much more efficient, much more effective. I know a lot more.
What were your biggest learning lessons from going through the acquisition process?
Oh, the acquisition process. It was a very long process. It started in phases. We originally started talking to Pepsi Bottling Group as our distribution and as a strategic investor. We then brought on a private equity at their request. And the biggest learning lessons really have to do with company culture. I'm a big believer in that there are people who are sort of born entrepreneurs. And I would put myself in that I'm a builder. To me, the most exciting thing when we were building One Coconut Water was working all day, the small little achievements. And then, by the way, going to Whole Foods and doing sampling ourselves, because we were building this thing. And then every new team member we brought in felt like a family member. And we all saw this. We were all part of this huge, we knew what we were building. We were all so passionate about it. And then you bring in a big investor and, you know, private equity, the culture changed. And then you become more of a manager than you are a builder. Probably the hardest thing was the company evolving from something that we were all so passionate and engaged to just hitting numbers and getting to this point. And for example, having a larger investor and a strategic investor, the way that they would do due diligence on a project, you know, they take months to analyze, should we do this? And as an entrepreneur, you don't actually think a lot. You go, we need to do this now or this doesn't work. And so having almost your hands tied was probably the biggest challenge of going through a strategic and to final acquisition.
And what ended up happening after the acquisition? How long did you stay involved in the company and what happened next?
We didn't. PepsiCo brought it in. They put it under the Naked Group. And actually, very sadly, you brought up COVID timelines. I have no sense of time with COVID. I think about 2 or 3 years ago, they pulled it from they no longer have it as a line, unfortunately. And it's okay. My heart's at peace with that. I know that I had a piece to play in building of the coconut water category in the United States. So I can, you know, Rodrigo and I feel very proud of that, but it is what it is. That's what happens.
I didn't know that actually. And, you know, I've talked to other founders and on this podcast, we've had other founders on here that have sold to very large companies. And I hear this often that sometimes these larger companies kill these brands, because when you're an entrepreneur and you're building these awesome brands and then you go to these larger companies, they just don't operate the way we operate.
They don't. And we had to be big enough. I think we weren't almost large enough for the distribution system. Actually, so one of our other, at the time, there was three companies. It was One, Vita Coco, and Zico. Zico went to Coke and Coke also shut them down. So, I mean, they're actually, Vita, I think I understand Zico is relaunching, but independently, not with Coke. So, and actually don't quote me on that because I don't completely know, but that is what I know. And then Vita Coco actually stayed very independent and they've IPO'd and they are the largest market player out there. So I've always thought it's a really interesting case study.
That is so interesting. I wonder if now, I mean, there was a lot of beverages then, but I feel like now there's new beverages being launched all the time. There's just got to be so much competition. Not that there's not room for everyone, but
beverage is it's a very tough industry, which is why I think coconut water was just so unique, because we created a new category that didn't really exist in the United States.
How did you handle, after exiting that business, dealing with the emotions of exiting?
No one's ever asked me that question. It was really tough because I was a working woman. I was a businesswoman and I never meant to stop working. I never dreamed of stopping working. And at that point I was a mother. I had an 18-month-old son when we did the final sale. I struggled and it was a very different time. I mean, this is 10 years ago. It was a very different time. There wasn't the groups like Entreprenista. There wasn't the angel networks of, you know, female founding networks. They didn't exist. I knew two other female founders. That was it. Like everybody, you know, back then, now it's a different world. So I struggled with stopping working, but I was also in a position that I didn't have to work and I wanted to have another child. So I was probably like 35. So it was this really transitional time in my life. So I struggled with the not working, of having purpose, but then I really tried to embrace the time off and embrace the ability to be with my son. And again, as I said, I knew I really wanted another child, which I eventually had. So I look back on those sort of 4 years where I wasn't working. The whole time I was going through it, I was always struggling of like, I just want to go back to work. I want to go back to work. And I tried to enjoy it, and I did. I had moved cities, and I built a community here in a city that I was new to. I live in Miami. It was a completely new city to me. So I really took the time. I had my family, built the community. And then when my daughter was three, I went right back to work.
Coming up, you'll hear all about how Emily returned to work as CEO of The Sacred Space and why she decided to start her business, One Tribe. Where did you go back to work?
So I went to a small company here called The Sacred Space. It had about 5 to 7 million in revenue. And I came in as the CEO to help the founder really structure the business, is what I would say. It was a multi-divisional, very similar to what I'm building today, a multi-divisional center. We had education, we had a little store, a farm, and a restaurant, a vegan restaurant, and it was and an events company. So there were 5 divisions, and it was getting all of those divisions to work together. So I kind of look at that time. I spent 2 years there really transitioning the company to prepare for growth.
And tell me what happened next. And I'm so excited to get into your new business venture now, because you have now created what I wish I had access to when I was going through my pregnancy.
Yes. Well, so, you know, it's funny. This was a business that it was actually a dream. Right when I sold One Coconut Water, this business idea came into my head. But I wasn't ready. Actually, it's funny. I know what it takes to build a business. It takes everything. You have the weight of the world on your shoulders, and it never actually goes away until you sell it. It's always there. And I didn't have the energy when I sold it. I was tired. It had been seven, 8 years of just nonstop, not much of a life. And I didn't have the energy to do it again, but I had this idea, and I would share it with friends, and I, you know, my really good friends had heard about it for years. It was after going back and running The Sacred Space and really kind of getting back into the work world. I mean, being 4 years out of working, a lot changed, especially in marketing and technology and everything. So that was an extraordinary gift to me. And so I left The Sacred Space to start what is called One Tribe, my new business. We are a pre and postnatal wellness and educational center. We've launched our first center here in Miami, and we're launching our digital platform. And then the goal is to grow One Tribes across the country.
You are creating and have created, like I said, what I wish I had when I was going through not just my pregnancy, but my fertility journey as well, because I was going in New York City to all of these different places for acupuncture, for massage, for yoga, for fitness, nutrition, and to be able to just go to one place that has everything would have been amazing. And actually, now that I'm speaking this out loud, I'm like, oh, this is exactly with Entreprenista, like why we created our Entreprenista community, to have all the stuff under one place. So it's like all of us trying to like take all of our learning lessons from all the things we wish we had from all these different experiences and creating businesses and community around it to just help. And I think that's how we all are as Entreprenistas. It's like we find these problems, and what was this problem for us, and how do we solve this and just create this better experience for everyone else?
That's exactly it. There's two purposes to business. One is the one-stop shop. You tend to have to be in great need. You have to research it, find it, book it, get there. So what we've done is we've curated this incredible team of experts. We have education, movement, and wellness. And it really was to create the one-stop shop to take a lot of the work out of the woman. Another part of it was having a very centrally located position. And that is, we are in Miami. We are as central, I always call it an inoffensive drive from everywhere in Miami, that you would come for the best of the best. And that bigger underlying foundation and mission is really to build community for these women. And so we've been open officially 3 weeks. And it's so interesting, because what you see is the women are coming in, beautiful pregnant women, and they're looking for community. They're looking to connect. They're staying after class. They're talking. And it's really at the base of what we're doing. We're providing education. We're providing source and resources, but really trying to foster that community, which is why we've really chosen to do it in brick and mortar. Because especially in this time of pregnancy and new motherhood, communing physically in real life, this is great, Zoom is great, but in real life is better.
I completely agree with you. Like, there's nothing better than virtually we can meet and we can connect and we can like start these relationships and conversations. But then when we're all able to get together in person and actually experience things, like even magic can happen online, but even more magic can happen in person as well. So I am definitely with you on that, Emily. Tell me about the time it took you to put together the plan for this business, go out to start to fundraise, then figure out what were all the resources that were needed to bring this to life. Because someone who walks into the One Tribe today is seeing this beautiful location with all of these amenities and services. But I know behind the scenes, a lot has gone into this to make this happen.
Yes. Well, so pretty much it was exactly 2 years to date from when we did our first, I had already had the name and the concept and the vision, but from when we said, okay, we're doing this, and I had brought the two women who are my business partners now, I'd asked them to join me to do a branding exercise. And that was in mid-December of 2021, right? So 2 years ago.
No concept of time.
Exactly. So 2021. And then from that to then deciding that we were all going to partner together and what that was going to look like, to finding the space and building the team of experts, which was actually one of the, that took a very long time of getting these experts who have their existing businesses and their existing practices to join us. And then putting together our curriculum of what our, you know, what our educational classes look like, what our movement divisions. So really building it all, it took 2 years. Construction slowed us down a little bit. So I put a buffer of about 5 months in there. So from branding to opening was exactly 2 years. But it did start many years before that. I conceived of this idea when my son was about 18 months, 2 years. So it's about a 12-year-old idea that I could never, as an entrepreneur, I could never let go of it.
No, I love that you finally brought that vision to reality. The day that the location opened and you had your first actual paying customers walk in, how did that feel for you?
Surreal, because you had been watching this product, because our product is the space and the team and the offering. And we spent so long building it. And then to be walking around this space, it felt surreal for a good, it's still kind of, I pinch myself in a way.
No, it's so amazing all that you've accomplished. I want to actually dive into the fundraising process of raising capital for One Tribe, because a lot of the founders in our community are raising capital. I know actually a lot of our listeners too are thinking about raising capital, and it is, I say, a full-time job and such an undertaking, but definitely a lot more helpful when you hear from people who have done it or are still doing it, and you can hear what's worked well and what hasn't. So I love to hear from you, Emily, like your biggest learning lessons of what has worked really well for you in the process. And also if you want to share some things that you've tried to in the fundraising process that maybe didn't work as well that you would tell people to not do.
Fundraising, especially in this market the last year, is all I heard was how hard it is. And it's true. It's hard out there. And we were doing a friends, family, and angel round. So that's where we are. I'm proud of what we've done. We're still fundraising. It should be a 100% a full-time job, but as you're building a company, it's impossible for it to be full-time. So it's, if I had two words of advice, one is keep the momentum going. And that's continuous meetings, continuous networking. And then the second is set dates, really set a, we are looking to raise this by this time, so that you give yourself a deadline and you give the investors a deadline and you can hold to it. Versus roll, you know, for a while I was sort of rolling and like, well, when it comes in, but setting the deadline helped. We still, you know, we raised a significant amount, but still the deadline obviously extends again. But having those end dates definitely helps.
Are there any tools that you use to stay organized, or tools in general that have helped you through your fundraise?
DocuSend, or was it not DocuSend? DocSend. I love that. That is the coolest website ever. And it's a way to see who's opened and read your investor deck. It just keeps track of everything. It's really, really, really fantastic. So that friend had recommended, and I highly, highly recommend it. Otherwise, I actually just kept my own logs. I have an Excel spreadsheet. I keep notes of absolutely everything. And what I would say is it's a constant, I love and hate fundraising. It is really fun because you're constantly meeting people. And I love to meet people. I love to talk with people. And so I enjoy it. And I found that fun. But then I also realized that every breakfast I went to was a fundraising opportunity. Every time I went, I would go to different things like it's a fundraising activity because it is. So you're always on. I was more social than I've probably ever been, for good and for bad. Luckily, I like being out a lot, but it was also a job. So you have to be willing to talk to people all the time and you have to enjoy networking. And one person gave me one word of advice that was great, was that every single conversation you go to, even if it doesn't lead to anything, you ask them for two more introductions. And it just becomes a constant networking. And what I can say is I have met some really cool people in the last year, including you, including Entrepreneurista. I mean, I've made so many new friends, colleagues. It's been interesting.
Yes, I feel like with fundraising, it's all about building your network, but really relationship building and making real, genuine, authentic connections and relationships. And I actually was thinking about this right before we were recording. And now I remembered as we were recording, I'm like, who introduced us? I'm like, oh yeah, Annie Evans from Dream Ventures. She's the one that introduced us because you did an SPV with Annie, which actually, do you want to share more about that process of bringing these incredible women together and doing an SPV?
It was incredible. Annie is such a powerhouse and an entrepreneurista. I was introduced to her actually by Marika of Misha Pods. And Annie, we did a really interesting thing. We created an event where we invited my entire network, every person I've ever spoken to, and then also a network of hers that she has. And then that network upon network, I have an advisor to the company. We invited that person's network and we created an event. We created an investor event for angel investors, founders, high net worth individuals, even talking to, and it was probably 98% women. And that was the goal, because this is One Tribe is my perfect investor is a female investor, a female business owner, or an angel investor who is located in Miami. Because we're launching in Miami, having a Miami investors was really my focus. I did speak to people around the country, but because we were starting here, this is where I kept very close to home. So we invited a large number of women investors, even women who had never made an investment, who had never been an angel investor, but has the ability to become one. And we presented the company, we presented the opportunity, and then we even had a discussion around angel investing and what it is that you might never think of yourself an angel investor, but you really are passionate about a business and you have the ability to invest. And that's what the SPV really opened up, because the SPV we had for smaller tickets. So anything 25,000 and above went straight to the cap table through a safe, and then everything under went into the SPV. And what was great about the event is actually a lot more came outside of the SPV. A lot of the investors came in, they loved the event, they believed in the concept. And so it was a really powerful experience to create an investor event and bring everybody in.
Yes, I think it's so amazing to be able to have these tools now, like SPVs, where you can pull incredible people together who may not have $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 to invest directly into a brand. Like, it's okay. There are these vehicles now where you can invest a few thousand dollars into a brand that you're passionate about, that you could make a difference in the brand as well, and really see, hopefully, at the end of the day, a return. But because we're talking about investing, of course, there's nothing that is guaranteed ever. I call it like Vegas money, right? You invest with money that you could lose it, but you could also have a really big win as well. And there's nothing better than supporting incredible women and founders like you that, one, you've already done it before and proven that you can do it, and that have the passion to really build something big and amazing to help other people. So, and you said you are still raising right now. So for anyone listening, reach out to Emily if you are interested in learning more about One Tribe.
Yes, yes, yes.
Emily, tell me this. What is your biggest business secret?
So when I think of what I'm really passionate about and what I'm good at, is I am a connector. I love to connect people. And when I look at One Coconut Water and when I look at now building One Tribe, both of them were so much about the people. It was connecting people, finding people who felt connected to the mission, who were passionate about the mission, who saw the mission. So there's that connection there. And then there's the connection between the people, between the team, having a team that everybody collaborative, a very collaborative team that everybody knows their part. And I really feel very passionate about this, is that You have to let everybody put sort of their superpower, their expertise, whatever it is, and let them shine in that way and put, let them do what they love and what they're really good at. And I think that's really the secret to building a business. Obvious mission that everybody believes in, getting everyone together and letting each of them shine and then collaborate and make that all work together.
That's such good advice. Emily, so what is next for One Tribe this year?
Oh, getting it off the ground. So we've launched and now really the next 12 months are getting the model working. So the way that we see it is Miami is our first location. So we've launched with a certain program with a product, which is our practitioners, our educational classes, and our movement classes. We will then launch them virtually. And then we will also, we're going to have learnings. So I really look at 2024 as the year of getting this model working. And then the next step is once we get it working, which I have every bit of confidence that we will, is then saying, okay, how are we going to grow? What are our expansion plans? And one thing I would tell any budding entrepreneur is that you think you're going in one direction and that it is never a linear path. So many things happen. So I'm very open to the idea that there are a lot of different ways that we can grow. My vision is really that we would go out to a next, you know, a Series A and start to raise additional capital to build other centers and to grow our virtual platform. Additionally, to create, to forge partnerships with like-minded companies. We are brick and mortar with a virtual offering, but we will always be in real life, or sorry, live and in real life, versus there are a lot of great platforms out there that are completely virtual. So I see a lot of opportunity to partner with different companies that are have only a virtual offering.
Yeah, no, that's such a great idea. Do you think you're going to go to another like major city next, or would you be so kind to come to Palm Beach Gardens so you can be right by me?
I always say it's going to be one of two or both. I could see one strategy is let's go up the coast of Florida. Let's start in Miami, then Fort Lauderdale, Boca, Palm Beach, Jupiter, and do smaller outposts throughout Florida, which is one way. And the other is to go to other major cities. And I would look at places like Denver, Austin, Phoenix, cities that are large, you drive, if they're driving cultures, and that you place it in the center and launch a very similar product.
What research will you have to do or data will you have to look at to make that ultimate decision of how do you decide what this expansion model is going to be?
Well, we will get to that, but it's really going to be looking at populations. And to be honest, I would go very deeply into the market with people that I trust and know, that are business people, mothers, understanding the market. I really knew them. I knew the LA market really well and the Miami market really well. And I knew that it was completely fragmented here in Miami, all over the place. And I think I'd be looking at markets like that, that have great practitioners, but that are all very fragmented and all over the place, that one central location would be a huge, and the one-stop shop would be a huge benefit. We know that women are looking for community. That's every city. That's going to be the same.
Well, Emily, I am so excited for you and I can't wait to hopefully come down to one, meet you in person, but come to One Tribe when I'm going to be down in Miami in February. So I'm so excited about that. Emily, last question for you. What does being an entrepreneurista mean to you?
So I'm newer to the community, but in general with that, I love the name entrepreneurista. It's so brilliant and it's so inclusive and it's modern and everything. And then just what you guys are doing, creating community for female entrepreneurs, which as I mentioned earlier, didn't exist. I'm proud to be a member and I'm proud to be in this growing community and support you in any way that I possibly can. And to support younger entrepreneurs and to connect with, to really inspire women to launch their businesses.
Well, you are so inspiring and such a wealth of knowledge from all that you have accomplished over the years. And I'm just so excited to continue to follow and see all the great things you're going to do and send all of my Souther Florida than me friends down to you in Miami. Emily, where can everyone find you, follow you, and feel free to share out all the links, and everyone will be linking out to everything in the show notes. So go tap the show notes to follow Emily and One Tribe everywhere.
Perfect. So our website is theonetribe.com and Instagram is the.one.tribe. And you can find me on LinkedIn at Emily Fritz Veloso.
Amazing. Emily, thank you again for being here and sharing your story. I'm Stephanie, and this is the best business meeting I've ever had. Hey, thanks for listening and leaving us a 5-star review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'd love to stay in touch with each of you. You can listen to all of our latest episodes at entreprenista.com and connect with us on Instagram at entreprenistas. We'd also love to invite you to join the Entreprenista League, our private membership community for trailblazing women. You can head over to entreprenista.com/the-league. We'll see you there. Wishing you a productive week ahead.